America Meditating Radio Show, we collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts 24/7. Hi, I'm Sister Jenna. Join me and guests on Blog Talk Radio as we amplify stories that compel us to be more for ourselves and everyone else around us.
Are you in need of a tech service company that's going to deliver the best solutions for your business? Then Atronica is your solutions headquarters. Here we specialize in your individual needs to make sure your business shines. For more information, please call 301-417-0070 or visit us at our website at atronica.net. Atronica, where we deliver for you.
Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor?
My neighbor?
Mr. Rogers passed along friendship, hoping we would too. Friendship, pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at Values.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Alona Holland, a listener of the America Meditating Radio Show. I'd like to convey my thanks to you, Sister Jenna and Sister Gita, all the way from Omaha, Nebraska.
Hi, my name is Missy Crutchfield with Gandhi's Bee Magazine, an online magazine designed to raise awareness and inspire people about all of the amazing things happening in the world, as well as all the challenging things that can help us raise awareness so we can make a difference in the world and be the change. One of my inspirations is Sister Jenna and America Meditating Radio. I listen, you should too.
I'm Roger Nelson. I'm the founder and director of the Global Consciousness Project, and you are listening to America Meditating Radio Show.
Welcome, everyone. This is Sister Jenna, and that was Lucinda Drayton on her CD, Love Surrounds You. It's a new release from her beautiful voice, and so just Google Lucinda, who's a very close friend of ours. You are listening to America Meditating Radio, and it's my pure feeling and wish that you're okay today, and whatever is emerging in your awareness, that it's okay, it's natural, it's normal. If it doesn't feel peaceful, then of course it's inviting you to change what you're thinking and what you're feeling, because there's nothing more important than having a solid relationship with ourselves. When we're comfortable with ourselves, it's very natural for us to be comfortable with other people. And that's where I feel the role of meditation and reflection and journaling, and really keep leaning into things that you might be most afraid of, mostly like just uncomfortable with. Keep checking why. In my crew of individuals that I have the fortune of being in service with, they are around me and everyone is so different and everyone is so unique. And I can't help how it keeps making me work more at who I need to be for me at a deeper level. It's like people will always do or be something that's not appropriate, but who am I at the core, and who do I need to be? I find that to be such an important question to keep asking oneself, quite vital. Look out for my article to be released soon in Huffington Post, and please continue to, let's grow together, let's live together, let's amplify our world of engaging each other together through our stories. And so please do visit Huffington Post and just Google yours truly, Sister Jenna. We're going to have an incredible guest on the air shortly, Michael Jazzy, I think that's how I'm pronouncing it. He's doing some incredible work with our up-and-coming generation, but he's also coaching individuals on how to deal better with relationship. You know, a lot of people will tell me, Sister Jen, I'm okay. Once I have God, I'm okay. But they're not dealing with the people or the circumstances around them. And I hear you. Yeah, we have God and we're okay. However, it's so vital to be aware that we must have good relationships with each other. We must be able to relate better with each other, because at the end of the journey, it was always about relationships. So let's do what we do best here on the America Meditating Radio Show, and that is to be reflective, to go inwards. And something that I've been sharing with everyone of late, release your attachments to your stories, please. Especially the ones that aren't serving you anymore. Just release them. They're of no use to you. None whatsoever. Not now. And not ever. Take a deep breath as we enjoy Carmen Warrington here and now. Then we'll get Sister Gita on the air to read us a nice little comment, and then the beautiful Michael Jazz will join us. Breathe in.
Here and now. These two meditation practices allow you to be present in the here and now. Not in the past, worrying about things that are over. Not in the future, worrying about things that might be. Right in the present. Because right here, and right now, you're okay. Let's begin with here. So make sure you're sitting comfortably and close your eyes or leave them half open if you wish. Begin by having a sense of where you are. Are you outdoors or are you in a building? Feel the temperature of this environment. Listen to the sounds in the distance. And what do you hear nearby? Notice everything without judging it, without commenting in your mind. Now, sense your body. Starting with your toes and slowly working your way up, become aware of the soles of your feet and your ankle bones. Feel the bend in your knees. Feel where your hands are and whether your fingers are curled over or straight. Feel where your body makes contact with the furniture. Notice the curve in your spine, in your lower back, middle of your back, the curve in your neck. Notice the angle of your head. And whether your teeth are together or slightly apart. Feel the texture of your clothing on your skin. Notice the temperature of your body. Sense the weight of your legs and your arms. Your head. Sense the weight of your whole body. Notice how still your body is. And how calm you are. Be present to your body here in this place for a few more moments. Rest in the stillness.
Good day and all the best wishes to you. The first relationship starts with I, this soul, and this body. And the relationship we have with God will always enhance the relationship I have with others. Taken from Companion of God, the book is authored by one of the world's wisdom keeper, Daddy Janki. The topic, relationships. When a relationship is not working, it is usually because there are needs and expectations that are not being met. There might be so much anger or hatred that your only desire might be just to run away from it all. However, this is not a solution. Wherever you go, there you are. What it is, it merely reflects your lack of understanding about where the real problem lies. The root of all needs and expectations is an unfulfilled spiritual desire. Satisfy your spiritual desires through the practice of meditation, and you'll be able to interact successfully with anyone. No longer needy? You will enter into relationships simply to share and enjoy. There will be no strings attached in the way you give of yourself. Your love will then be unconditional. We must learn to bring spirituality into our relationship. Others will learn by our example. It is a way of inspiring and uplifting each other. Thanks to wisdom, I have just realized that I do have some more work to do. Have a pensive day, all of you. Om Shanti.
We all do, Sister Gita. We all do. Michael Jazz is the founder and executive director of Relationship Foundation and has trained with renowned relationship experts Marshall Rosenberg and Harville Hendricks. Michael has been coaching and giving relationship classes and workshops since 2002. He's dedicated to bringing about a new awareness of the dynamics of healthy relationship with the goal of making healthy relationships a component of our educational process, engaging not only students but parents and educators as well. Michael is the author of Healthy Relationships 101, and today we're so happy to welcome Michael to the show. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're doing such great work.
I appreciate you acknowledging this work. It's so vital for our health and well-being on every level.
It is. I had the chance of looking at your website with some of the sharing of the college students and the middle-aged students, and I thought, how needed is this at this time? Because we're all so awkward with ourselves. We're always struggling with being comfortable within our own selves. But to be going into the school systems, Michael, congratulations. It is timely, powerful, and I'm sure it's going to require a lot of patience, but you know the results are going to be amazing.
It has been amazing, and the patience has more been a sense of being driven. That the reason I went into this and how it all began was the thought, what would my life have been like if I had this when I was in school? And that has really been what gets me up in the morning.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the Relationship Foundation and its mission. I mean, why relationship education is essential to have in our school systems? I mean, I know the answers, but just for listeners who might need to learn more about it, tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, well, the very thought of something called relationship education is not something that's part of our learning process. We spend at least 12 years in school preparing for a career. How much time do we spend preparing for a relationship?
Right.
We emphasize any relationship. Because when you say the word, if you ask someone, are you in a relationship, that usually means significant other. But friends, family, coworkers, people you're going to be with for ideally the rest of your life. 100 years ago, the life expectancy was in the mid-40s. Today, we live to 90. How do you cultivate and sustain a relationship that will flourish for decades and decades? These are questions that I asked myself as I was going into this. And what happened was about in 2007, I was coaching. I do relationship coaching with an administrator in high school who had gone through a very difficult breakup. And after a period of time, and he decided that he didn't hate women and would be in a relationship again. He asked me if I would come into his school and speak to a group of junior boys. And I said yes, because I couldn't find the no. And I went into the school a few months later, and I started speaking with these boys, and I could see they were distracted. And something unusual happened. I found myself after a few minutes standing up, and I said, like a drill sergeant, listen up. And there was quiet in the room. And I gave my talk. And later that day, he wrote an email to the principal saying he had not seen a group of boys transformed in 42 minutes in his 10 years in the school. Would I teach relationship ed as a component of health ed? And I said yes, because I couldn't find the no. and thus began 8 of the hardest years of my life, but the most rewarding, the most fulfilling. And one of the things about relationship education is relationship with yourself. I've always wanted to do something that I thought could make a contribution to the well-being of others, but I wasn't sure how. And I've done many different jobs and worked in different areas and traveled, but there was always something saying, what's missing? What else is there? So I'm very grateful for this moment when what I say is, fate put me where I've been yearning to be my whole life.
Michael, tell me, when you said it was a difficult 8 years of your life, what was difficult about it? Was it you acclimating yourself to this unfolding scene in your life, or the reality of facing the state in which the youths were in, or even just the educational system, realizing how much work it needed? What was it that made it really difficult for you?
Well, the thing that was challenging was breaking into the school system. I wound up going into that school for an entire year. It was voluntary. And the reaction from the students, the response from teachers and parents was so positive, I thought, great. All the schools in New York and then eventually the whole country will want relationship education. So I started calling. And, well, we don't have money for this. We don't have it in our schedule. We're filled with math and science and history and geography and computer science. So where do you... We wish we could. Goodness, we need this. But it took a lot of calling and networking, and finally I went into another school where I was in for an entire semester, and I sort of built and developed a curriculum with the teacher that I taught with for the next 5 months. And from there, schools became more receptive because we began to fashion and develop an actual curriculum. And one of the main things we focus on in the curriculum is bully prevention. And before that, however, we used something called nonviolent communication. And it's a program that was developed by an author, Marshall Rosenberg. And we teach the kids how to express their needs and feelings without blame and judgment, and to listen empathically. What does that mean? Listen, express one's needs and feelings without blame and judgment, and to listen empathically. Well, if you ask me what I'm feeling, I mean, because I'm a man and I was conditioned not to show my feelings, I had a pretty limited vocabulary. How do I feel? I feel okay. I'm not okay. But suddenly I had this larger vocabulary of feelings and needs. And perhaps most importantly is, what are my needs? Well, in the school I had a need for contribution, creativity, discovery, effectiveness, growth, learning, movement, participation. These are words that we all know. In a significant other relationship, acceptance, appreciation, affection, care, closeness, companionship, partnership, nurturing, love, warmth, understanding. We know all these words, but we don't use them on a regular basis. So when our needs are met, we feel what? We feel love. We feel relaxed. We feel comfortable. We feel grateful. We feel moved. We feel touched. We feel calm. We feel peaceful. Suddenly, I have a vocabulary of feelings relating to whether my needs are met or not met. If they're not met, I might feel sad. I might feel disappointed. I might feel tense and angry. I might feel annoyed. I might feel frustrated. But when you ask someone how you're feeling and they say, well, I feel okay, I don't know what that means. I'm not so good. So this helps us define who we are, what our needs are, what our feelings are, and to be able to say things like, I'm feeling a little disappointed because I have a need for consideration. Would you be willing to help me set up the room? Instead of saying, you know, I thought that was inconsiderate. So the violence of our words, that was inconsiderate. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of stupid. Why did you do that? You're never on time. The word never and always. You're always late. And to look at, like, and start to ask ourselves, does this need to be said? And we actually practice expressing our needs and feelings without blame and judgment. And what do you do if you want to get good at a sport?
You practice.
Right, a language, an instrument. So we have a relationship practice.
Right.
And it's extraordinary, and it's so simple. And it doesn't take 400 pages of the neuroscience of language to start to say, I'm feeling because I'm feeling this and I'm needing this.
You know, I know from our master educator here in Washington, then I gained more knowledge about the work that they were doing. And they would literally tell me about all the academia and all the stuff that they were looking to evaluate teachers so that students could be better. And I kept wondering, what kind of a program is this? This really isn't teaching really the real gist of what it means to be in school, especially in this time. And I kept wondering, where were educators today, because the heart is missing and something like relationship building is definitely missing. I'm not saying this is for everyone, but in so many areas of this school system, we're really, really falling so much behind in just spiritual empowerment and spiritual qualities. You know, looking at the impact of technology, social media, Michael, would you say that the social media has actually improved relationships and communications, or have they actually moved youths and adults more away from each other?
Well, that's a very challenging question. I think that, and I can see that technology has offered tremendous opportunity. A kid who's in Harlem that wants to study oceanography picks up his cell phone, her cell phone, and is in touch with kids in Santa Cruz. And before you know it, they're in a camp, going out on a boat. And there's so many wonderful connections have been made, and people finding each other from high school, from chance meetings. So the benefits have just been extraordinary. However, there's been some consequences. So I personally think that cell phones are driving us apart in many ways. I remember several years ago, I was at dinner with a group of people, and a woman's cell phone rang, and she hit the off button. And she said, oh, that's my best friend. That was your best friend. What happened? She says, I don't talk, I only text. At that moment, I went, huh, what's this about? So it's the texting. And then I've coached couples, and the exchanges that go on in texting, I've seen things you would never say to somebody face-to-face. It's allowed for this expression. It's, in many ways, for some of us, it's brought out the worst in us. And the trolling and the entertained by the degrading comments that are made. And then, of course, it's the cyberbullying. I mean, hundreds of kids are committing suicide every year because they get ganged up on Facebook and other internet sources. So you're not able to take that kind of an emotional onslaught at 8, 10, 12, 15. Who can take it at any age? So I see many drawbacks. And in fact, in 2012, a book came out by Dr. Larry Rosen, a University of California professor. He wrote a book called Eye Disorder, about the neurological changes that happen in people. They start to shake if they haven't looked at their messages. And recently, in the New York Times, just about a week ago, there was an article about what happens when you keep your neck at a 60-degree angle, looking down all day. It is the equivalent over a period of time of 5 gallons of paint pushing pressure on the neck. And already we're beginning to see physiological changes. They're calling it eye hunch. So this could be a very long show talking about cell phones. Great benefits, but we have to be more conscious.
And it's like everything we do, Michael. We have to do everything in moderation and with balance. And, you know, it again goes back to what you're doing, the whole aspect of relationship and how healthy are we emotionally and internally in terms of how we move forward in life. And so you have been taking care of building these youth, and you've worked with adults, and years have passed by for you so far, and you're using the tools that you have seen helpful in the lives of building other people. How has it been impactful for Michael? What's something that you have realized that is like the go-to card to make a relationship at least run a little bit better?
The main thing has been being able to identify and articulate my needs and feelings without blame and judgment, and to listen empathically. It's made all the difference, because I see people as people with needs and feelings rather than my judgments. And so, to give you an example of this, I was carrying 2 bags of notebooks, 27 notebooks in each bag, down from the elevated subway in Jackson Heights, Queens, about 4 years ago to a school that didn't have enough funds to get us. We had the kids keep journals, so I was carrying blank notebooks, and the kids write extraordinary things. And as I was going down the stairs, I came to the first platform, and I saw somebody walking up very slowly. Then I saw somebody on the street by the sidewalk with that hurried look in their face. And I remember thinking, don't. Because if they went past the slow-moving person, I'd have to stop in my tracks. But they did. So the first words that came to my thought, or came to my mind, were thoughtless, inconsiderate. Now, I won't tell you what words would have come to my mind a few years before. I was giving her a New York peace of mind. But as my foot touched the sidewalk, I asked myself a question. Well, I wonder what her needs are. Suppose she's going to see her aunt in a hospital who's met her needs for support, care, closeness, affection, appreciation, nurturing, love, and she has an hour to live. Well, what was her strategy to meet those needs, to get to the hospital, to see her aunt? Well, part of that strategy included cutting me off. But is she thoughtless and inconsiderate? And then I started to imagine, well, I wonder if she's raised money for a homeless shelter in her neighborhood. Is she considered a living saint to all of her friends? And I imagine all the wonderful things about her, and I realized I don't know who she is. But I just called her thoughtless and inconsiderate. At that moment, something shifted in my neural pathways. I realized people are not my judgments because I don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. Later, I was in a friend's car, and somebody cut us off. What am I going to do? Roll down the window and say, that didn't meet my need for safety and stability? No. We were angry. We were annoyed. And my friend, what a stupid thing. And then I said, well, suppose he's going to pick up his child who's at school and they didn't catch their ride and it's getting dark and they're afraid. And suppose that person has also done a lot of community service. Are they a jerk? Or did we just not appreciate their strategy to meet their needs?
Needs.
And that statement is very freeing from our judgments, which have been ingrained in us and programmed us since the day we could first talk.
It kind of reminds me of something that my grandmother used to say, when you walk in someone else's shoe, then you kind of understand what they're going through. And I think we might be in such a self-serving society that we forget that people are going through their own journeys and they are their own, and that it's perhaps signaling to us more of an attention to understand, so where are you now? What do you need to do? Why are you feeling that? And in checking your feelings, you can start to really have a very deep, meaningful relationship with yourself. Hey, I want to talk about your event coming up on February 20th, because I know we're coming to a close of the conversation. On February 20th, the Relationship Foundation, in partnership with Prevent Child Abuse in New York, will be holding a screening, the award-winning documentary Paper Tigers. Let our listeners know about that and what we can do. Can we participate? What are the things that you're looking forward to?
Yes, well, we're going to be showing this film on 20th of February at a school on 16th and Irving Place. That's right near the Union Square subway stop in New York. And the reason that we're sponsoring this film is that we're realizing that the adverse childhood experiences, they're called the ACEs, are something that we've now included in our curriculum. Because once we learn how to express needs and feelings without blame and judgment, to listen empathically, we, from that place, we can look at bully prevention, self-esteem and body image, preventing cycles of abuse, technology, addiction, even divorce, and the way we use language. But now, understanding what the ACEs are is essential. And what happened in this film, it's about a school in Southeastern Washington State, in Walla Walla. And about 4 years ago, I saw an article in the newspaper about a school, and it said suspension days dropped 85%. And I read this article, and I was like, God, what is this guy doing? So I emailed the principal, and I said, this is amazing what you're doing. And I said, I didn't, you know, expect to hear from him. And an hour later, I got an email back from him. This is amazing. What are you doing? What you're doing in New York? And we began what my assistants were calling a bromance over the summer. The principal's name is Jim Sporleader, and he loves people. He loves children. He was 22 years as a teacher. He went into an alternative school that kids were put in where there were gangs and drug use and teen pregnancy, very low graduation rates. And what happened was Jim went to a talk on neuroscience and about this ACEs study. This was conducted by the Center for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente, which is a health maintenance organization in California. And for 12 years, they asked over 17,000 people certain questions about why they had addictions or why they had issues with obesity and other physical challenges. And what they found out was that 2/3 of the people had one or more ACEs. Well, what's an ACE? It's something we all know about. But the 10 of them comprised their study, and those ACEs are emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, physical neglect, not enough food and clean clothes, emotional neglect, it didn't feel like people believed in you, you didn't feel safe, you didn't feel the love at home, and then about parents, a parent addicted, a parent in jail, a parent emotionally depressed, a parent subjected to domestic violence, or a loss of a parent through divorce or abandonment. And what they found out, they asked the kids anonymously how many ACEs they had. And in the film, you see that some of them had as many as 8. And it's considered crucial. And what they also discovered, if you have 2 or more ACEs, the percentage of heart disease goes up 10%. I'm not sure of the exact figures. Cancer, 7%. Attempting suicide, 4 or 5%. So what the CDC is calling this is the nation's worst health crisis and the least known. And what happened by understanding that these kids were not their behavior and that in many ways their behavior was out of their control, and just getting through the school doors in the morning was for many of them a great accomplishment. What they began mm-hmm. to do is they created what was called a trauma-sensitive school. And instead of punishment and expulsion, the kids had more support and understanding. And what they found out was one caring adult made all the difference. And in a 2-year mm-hmm. period, suspension days went from 796 to 135. Graduation rates went up 5 times. And you see this evolution in the film. And it's so striking and so moving that we're showing it in New York, and I'm so grateful. I eventually was brought out to the school and did a day-long training with the staff at Lincoln High. And so we think it's so important for schools to know that kids are not their behavior, that they need
Beautiful.
That one caring adult.
Beautiful. Michael, your work has really captivated me. And I would definitely like to speak more to you regarding that and to see how we can bring that even here in the nation's capital, because I think it is so vital, maybe even now more than ever, because the tables have turned. I mean, with technology and social media, I don't even know how much we're really prepared to begin to even understand what the youths are going through emotionally and mentally, because we can only get an idea of it, but we haven't lived through that stage, so we don't know what it must feel like. So it's a whole different learning curve. Michael, thank you so, so much for the work that you're doing. I want to get you back on the air. I want to talk more about this issue. I think it's extremely vital and extremely urgent. Before I let you go, leave me with your favorite life quote and a website that our listeners can get a hold of if they would like some more information. Just really, really powerful stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too. It's been a pleasure. Our website is therelationshipfoundation.org, easily found by going to trf.net. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We're always grateful for donations. Any donations are tax deductible, and any schools that are interested. We have a curriculum that we're sending out, and actually social service agencies are now contacting us as well. We never thought it would go beyond the schools. But we're getting calls from domestic violence prevention, even from counselors in prison. And we're so grateful that this is spreading beyond two schools and beyond. And my favorite quote is, give everything you've got because you are the giving of everything.
Beautiful. Michael, thank you so very much and all the very best.
Thank you, too.
Keep up the good work. Bye.
Bye.
So you just might end up somewhere that you're not really supposed to be, and then it turns out to be an incredible contribution, an incredible service to the world. I love what the Relationship Foundation is doing. Please, my listeners, see what you can do to support Michael and his good work. The education system needs help. Not only do the youths need help, the teachers need help. It has a lot to do with how you're relating to you. It has a lot to do with how you're relating to another person. You cannot do well with other people if you're not well inside.
and if the conversation within your being is not really healthy. So big, 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 big flag. Let's help the youths of tomorrow and let's build our own relationship with ourselves. Remember one of my closing quotations, if you're planning to change the world, then change yourself first and you're on your way pretty much. So I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Michael Jaz, and please go to therelationshipfoundation.org. It's a nonprofit. And any educators who are listening on, just contact Michael. See what you can do. See where this can go. But I think it's an important time and it's timely. Thanks, everyone. Don't forget, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. We are here to love each other the same. So let's do that. We'll end today's conversation with our friends at Agape, Ricky Byers-Beckwith, on Holy, Holy Way. Take care, everyone.